If there are any old Germans listening, we're going to get so much email.
Again, I lived in Germany. I love the Germans.
And you are the nicest person ever.
And you're nice. And they're so trustworthy. And I believe everything they say. There you go. Okay. So during the 1988 presidential campaign, stay with me here, Dan Quayle, remember him? He said, quote, "Votes are like trees. And if you're trying to build a forest, if you have more trees than you have forests, then at that point, the pollsters will probably say you win." Okay. If you're like any other human being, you might think that that's mildly confusing. We all did. It turns out the actual electoral process is just about as confusing as that particular quote. Remember in 2000 when Al Gore won the popular vote but not the election, and the Florida results had to go all the way to the Supreme Court? After that mess, a lot of people said the process could be a whole lot simpler and maybe less controversial if we just elect our president based on that popular vote. So now there's a bill introduced in 2006 in state legislatures across the country called the National Popular Vote Bill. This would allow states to give their votes to the candidate that wins the national popular vote. New Jersey Governor John Corzine signed that legislation Sunday, and Illinois is expected to sign it too in the coming weeks. Joining us now to explain how it works is Chris Pearson of National Public Vote, the organization that proposed this bill. He's also a state representative from Vermont, a state that's currently debating whether to pass this legislation. Hey, Chris.
How are you?
Doing well. Thanks very much for joining us.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
I'm going to ask you with a little bit of a primer, if you could take us back to our eighth grade civics class for a moment. And can you just give us, I know it's complicated, but just a short explanation, a reminder, if you will, of what the Electoral College is and does.
Sure, I'll do the best I can. It was part of the Constitution, and it was part of some of the compromises that the founders went through. And basically, at that time, it was a way of hedging between giving all the power to the population and sort of going with more of a parliamentary system. And, of course, in those days, there wasn't mass education. There was a real balance between a need to entice small states into the union and balance them against larger interests. So the Electoral College was envisioned, if you like, of a bunch of people in each state, sort of the leaders or the elite, getting together in each state and making a decision for who their state would vote for. And it was actually had nothing to do with voters. In the first few elections, a lot of states didn't even let voters choose presidential candidates. Taken many, many years, took decades before we saw the system we have today, and they are all a matter of state law. We still have electors. They're not really the elite of each state. They're party faithfuls, and each state has a law that determines how those electors are awarded.
And in order to win the White House, you have to have won a certain percentage of those electoral votes.
You have to win a majority of the Electoral College, which is now 538 members. So you have to win at least 270 electoral votes.
How does the National Public Vote Bill change that, popular vote,
Popular Vote, and our website's nationalpopularvote.com, just asks states to come together and say, our state isn't going to give its electoral votes to whoever wins the state. They're going to give them to the candidate that wins the most votes in the whole country. Now, our plan has a threshold, like it's been passed now in Maryland and New Jersey. It's pending on the governor's desk in Illinois. Nothing changes in those states. They just adopt a law, and then they wait for other states to join up. And it requires a threshold of states that represent 270 electoral votes, roughly a majority of the states, to sign up. And once you get there, then the Electoral College will be updated, I like to say, and it will automatically award the presidency to the candidate who got the most votes in the whole country.
So you could live in a state that went Republican, let's say, but if you were ascribed to this bill, if your state had passed this, and if the national popular vote went in favor of the Democrat, then your state would put those votes behind the Democrat.
Well, that's true, but only if enough states have passed it that the whole thing took effect.
So everybody has to do this.
You know, and right now we have a system where my state might vote one way or the country might vote one way and the Electoral College votes the other way. So we elect the second place candidate. I mean, there are trade-offs here, and The real problem that we have is partly the wrong winner, as you've indicated, but it's also that most states simply are totally taken for granted. They sit on the sidelines. My state, Vermont, is a good example. Large states like New York.
Idaho, my home state. No one cares about Idaho.
That's right. We're totally, totally taken for granted. It's not for any reason other than we are safely presumed to vote one way. So in my state, we're going to vote Democratic. In Idaho, they're going to vote Republican. In Idaho, the Republicans don't campaign there, and the Democrats, because they're going to win, Democrats know they're going to lose, they don't bother to go there.
Now,
and that's the case in two-thirds of the states, and I don't think we're well served by that.
Now, Chris, the arguments against this, people say this is purely anti-federalist. This is against what the founding fathers intended for our country. We're a federalist state. This takes the power away from the state's popular vote. What's your response to that?
I would say that right now, having two-thirds of the states routinely locked out does not serve the state's interests. So I think it's quite appropriate for states to stand up and claim the power that the Constitution gives them in this question and say, hey, I'm tired of sitting on the sidelines and watching Florida and other states have all the power. This is going to correct that.
And what about the logistic issues? Everyone says, what if you had to do a recount of the entire national popular vote? That would be Florida times a kajillion.
Yeah, and that's a frightening prospect. But in fact, you know, part of the reason we have trouble today, and this applies to fraud too, we can talk about that if you like. Florida was a problem in 2000, but the popular vote across the country was not particularly close. It was separated by about 500,000 votes. So what happens is you have 120 million voters in this country, and you carve them up into 51 different precincts right now, 50 states in the district, and you're just mathematically more likely to create a need for a recount. When you pool all 120 million people together, which is what the National Popular Vote Bill does, you're far, far less likely to see the need for a recount. So we're, in fact, minimizing that problem.
Okay. Well, clearly a very interesting, complex issue that's been around with us for a while. People have been debating this. So far, Maryland is on board. So is New Jersey. We'll see how many other states sign on. Vermont State Representative Chris Pearson works with National Popular Vote, the organization that proposed this bill. Thanks so much, Chris, for explaining this to us.
It's my pleasure.